Hello and welcome to the Interfish Podcast, where we bring you the week's most interesting and compelling seafood news. I'm Drew Cherry, editor at Interfish, and it's been a busy week. Just today, some bombshell news. The European Union made a ruling that Norwegian salmon producers had acted in cartel-like ways to fix prices of salmon going into the bloc. Aquaculture health giant Benchmark announced it would seek a sale. We had a couple major top executive shuffles, but today we want to talk a bit about shipping rates, particularly with the backdrop of the conflict happening in the Red Sea. Our correspondent John Evans, who covers shipping and its impact on seafood closely, is going to give us a rundown of what's happening. Then after that, we're going to be hearing from Gorya Nikolic. He's an analyst with Rabobank. He's going to be giving us a forecast for the shrimp sector. But first, over to you, John.
Yeah, well, rates have been rising since before Christmas, really. And when you look at the data I saw, particularly today, they've gone higher than ever. From about mid-September to mid-December, container shipping rates were around about $1,500, sometimes fluctuating a little bit below it for a 40-foot container. But now I've seen rates in the last two or three days from Drury, the shipping analysts, pointing more towards $3,750. And something that came into view this morning, I was looking at Freightos figures, and they were saying it's $4,700, and that's a rise of 282%. That's to destinations from China to Europe. So yes, it's really looking like difficult times in terms of costs for freight. And I suppose the question is, and you're going to ask me, Drew, are we heading back to the days of $20,000 that we saw during the height of a pandemic? Well, at that time, there was a lot of shipping containers stranded in China, particularly because of their zero tolerance policy at that time. But now we have shipping containers stranded in other parts of the world where they're not needed, or shipping companies needing them back. So there is a shortfall in equipment, which is also putting pressure on shipping rates. It's a kind of similar problem, but slightly different, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, and this is obviously bad, unwelcome news for the seafood industry. But you look back almost a year ago, or even 6 months ago, for that matter, prior to the Red Sea conflict, and things were actually looking quite good for shippers, or rather people that were paying to ship. But the companies themselves, the shipping companies, they were kind of bemoaning the fact that they felt like refrigerated container rates were close to the bottom. There was a price war happening in Asia and European trades. But Is there any signs that we are going to see any kind of softening in short term?
I don't think really until this situation with the Houthi rebels from Yemen is resolved one way or the other, or the, put it this way, that the attacks stop. One thing that is forcing up refrigerated container prices, or which has the potential to force up refrigerated container prices, is that shipping lines tend to switch more towards dry goods, dry cargo, which could be electronics, it could be grain, that kind of thing. They're less interested in the hassle of a claim, an insurance claim against a refrigerated container. With containers stranded in the wrong part of the world, as I mentioned earlier, I don't see that happening in the very short term.
Well, thanks, John. We'll look for more of your coverage on interfish.com as you keep us posted on events. Now, joining us on the podcast today is Gorya Nikolic. He's a senior global specialist seafood at Rabobank, Gorion just released a new report with his team on the outlook for aquaculture in the coming year. We wanted to focus today on shrimp. Shrimp had a miserable year in 2023, and that's been quite some time that it struggled. Just as a look at that, U.S. shrimp imports fell 9% by volume through October last year and 20% by value. Europe had the same struggles. And while China saw large imports, according to Rabobank's outlook, it may not see the same type of activity in 2024. So, Gorion, welcome. Why don't we just start with a broad question. How did we get here with shrimp? How do we get to this miserable place?
Thank you, Drew, and nice to be here. Let's start with that first, so a little bit of history. Well, as you know, the shrimp industry, in some similar fashion to salmon, were beneficiaries of the demand growth that occurred during COVID. As you know, people couldn't go to food service. They migrated to retail. But at retail, you don't have the breadth of products and species that you have at food service. So only a few species benefited, and shrimp especially. So we had this great demand expansion, prices were lifted, and the industry responded. So we had a really good growth and good prices for a while. It was a golden, maybe 1.5 years for the sector. But then, as we know, we started to, let's say, we had to have some monetary, we got inflation, first of all, due to the actions by the government that were taken to stimulate the economy during COVID. And after the inflation, opposite actions needed to be taken, which in combination with high energy costs really impacted disposable income across the West. Once disposable income went down, and at the same time also food service was open, that demand for shrimp started to decline. So that was the beginning of the difficult period. We first noticed piling up inventories in the United States and in Europe, and weakening demand, and prices started to slide further down. What kept the market, let's say, from an even further slide throughout, say, the second half, especially of 2023, was China opening up. China itself was then coming to the end of its COVID lockdowns. And many companies, many importers were excited that the Chinese economy would finally open up and people would be able to consume shrimp in a much bigger way. In China, shrimp has a large food service component. So they went out and bought shrimp in large amounts, and that was for some time an important driver, particularly for Ecuador. But actually, as the economy opened up, while demand increased, it did not quite increase as expected, or due to their own macroeconomic issues that they had in China. So similar to US and Europe. But then in 2023, end of 2023, we had a pileup of inventory in China, which also cooled demand. And we had a further sliding down of the shrimp price. So by the end of 23 and even early 24, which is now, we are seeing global shrimp prices probably at least a decade, maybe even 2-decade low. So it's a tough start of the year, you could say.
What do we know about inventories in the United States? What do we know about how demand is shifting going into 2024? Are there signs that things are going to be picking up a bit more?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So I think certainly for the U.S., the signs are most clear that we reached some kind of a bottom. We are looking at the delta of the value and volume of imports. And probably the bottom was, let's say, the worst point of import demand was reached around June, July. And after that, we've seen incrementally improving numbers. And that coincides also with improvements in the economy. Inflation is becoming a bit more under control. Disposable income is improving due to lower energy costs. And at the same time, actually, we did not see any increase in unemployment. Employment has stayed high, wages have come up. So all of these are good signs that the US is beyond the low point and growing, not at a fast pace and not yet fully recovered to the high point it was perhaps in 2022, but definitely growing again. So we should see slight positive demand in the US market throughout 2024.
You know, that slide in prices from, well, it's been sliding for quite some time. We hit a massive high in 2021, right, in November. So talk us through that when we hit this, well, it wouldn't have been a record high, but it would have been a high that would stretch back for a long ways. So what happened in 2021 that led to that spike? And is there ever a chance that we'll see things moving back up to those types of levels?
It's unlikely. It's unlikely. I think that was really the combination of factors back then, as the you still had government support of the economy. People still were not traveling and using the money, the disposable income for those things, but at the same time, they had high consumption of food at retail, but also food service was opening. So a lot of things coincided and really increased that demand function. And also, as elastic as shrimp supply is, it wasn't possible to respond to such an increase in demand so shortly. So prices went up to, like you mentioned, almost unseen level. Perhaps we need to go back to the EMS crisis until we see something like that. But as it is now, it is really unlikely to see this again anytime soon. This sector is known for supply elasticity, which means even a small increase in price does create a response on the supply side, and it remains a structurally buyer's market due to this supply elasticity. So I don't think we're going to come back to that price point anytime soon, and that's I think why we called it in our note that this might be the new normal. We now see, in economics terms, you basically see a structural shift of the supply curve, and that shift has now occurred, and it's unlikely that it's going to change dramatically. We need a big jump in demand for that to happen, and we know that's not going to happen soon.
Dorian, you mentioned demand, and there's, a fledgling global effort to create a generic shrimp marketing effort to boost demand, particularly in the U.S. to start. Is there are there do you have any thoughts on whether that strategy will make a difference in the long run, or as so much of the information shows, shrimp demand seems to be tied a lot of times to how well the economy's doing and things of that nature.
Yeah, I think this is exactly the right thing that the industry needs to do. This shrimp is an excellent product. It's so convenient. It's good for every culture. It is there's no must peeled. There are no bones. It's bite size. You can do so many things with it. It's healthy. It's lean. And yet you see other sectors do so well with marketing their product. And you really need to think about it. At any one time, there is negative information in the market. People talking, people sometimes associate wrongly shrimp farming, but they don't know it's farmed, and they think it's wild caught by trawlers plundering the sea, this kind of associations, or they believe there is all kinds of unhealthy substances in shrimp. Many times these associations are incorrect. So in one side, we need to combat these with good information. And the second, the sector needs to provide the consumer ideas and of how to cook it, how to consume it, and just the ideas for recipes. So this I think is a really important point, and it's something that should have been done long ago. And we certainly have seen that, think about the Norwegian marketing board for salmon and all the positive feelings people often get about consuming salmon. There is no such thing in shrimp, and this is the other, let's say, big farm species. So we definitely need something like this. I'm positive about it. Question is whether it will be executed in a good way. I still don't know. Let's see how it goes, right?
Let's talk about the Chinese market, because that is one that's so opaque and so difficult to understand. The shrimp market in China, we saw a huge boom as the country opened up in imports, but your projections are showing that maybe that won't be the case. Walk us through the outlook for China.
Well, to start with, we see China as like a mystery and an enigma wrapped in lack of data. So it's a very, very difficult market to understand, right? And there, I'll tell you what we think is going on, but then I'll tell you also what we don't know. So our feeling is that the Chinese economy is actually growing now. It's coming out of COVID, and there is growth. And consumption is improving, although perhaps slower than we saw in Europe and North America. But the growth is there. There is this, but then the question is, what about import demand, right? So we can make an assumption certainly on long-term trends and knowing income elasticity of demand in China for shrimp. We can with some certainty say that perhaps demand growth for shrimp in China could be somewhere between 6 and 9% per year, which is great. But then comes the issue of import demand, because that's the one that really drives Ecuador, and it drives other countries to a lesser extent in India. And we need to, and if it's not there, we would have price erosion. So the import demand is then determined by, well, at least the inventories that we've seen now. That's the short-term dynamic. And perhaps it's difficult to understand the inventory since there's no data about that. But at the end, the short-term dynamic is not very relevant. But at some point, those inventories will be consumed, and we should return to our long-term demand function, which is excellent. But the really difficult point to understand China is the domestic production. Data on domestic production in the public domain is usually wrong. It's too high from what FAO are saying or other Chinese-related sources. All the other, let's say, sources of data, such as broodstock and feed, are also often incomplete. But we do know that there has been significant growth, especially in the last 2 years. We hear about construction of various types of new types of shrimp farms across China. How will these develop? It's honestly, I don't have the answer for it. I think that in historically they struggled. For a long time, they struggled to supply the growing demand in China, and that's what allowed Ecuador to grow so strongly. Ecuador today sells 70+% of their product to China. But it seems that some business models are working, particularly in the fresh segment, and these technologies now maybe are less susceptible to the complications that they have there biologically, and actually the less than ideal weather, because of course it's too cold in winter in China to farm shrimp. So that one is I don't really have an answer. I think that it's we're not going to see the growth of those producers like we did in 2022 and 23, but it re remains to be seen. It's a big question mark.
You know, you mentioned about China's economy when it came out of COVID and how things improved. Do you have any sense of where the country's economy is headed in 2024 and how that may influence shrimp consumption?
Yeah. So the Chinese economy as it exiting COVID is in a completely different place than where US and Europe were. When we were exiting COVID, we were facing inflation because we had overstimulated the economy with government intervention. In China, they're facing deflation. They're facing that many consumers have realized that perhaps they need to save more, and it's already a country which saves a lot. A lot of the savings that people have are actually in real estate. Their pension fund is, in fact, real estate. That has collapsed. They're worried about the entire, let's say, healthiness of the real estate market. And that creates a negative consumer sentiment and higher degree of saving. Now, when people save more, they typically spend less. So that puts a brake on consumption. And now we're seeing that the Chinese government will probably come out with stimulus. And it's interesting if they actually come up with a new type of stimulus, because until now, they've usually wanted to stimulate to improve production. They usually focused on exporting or productive assets. What is needed now is to stimulate consumption. So we do expect perhaps lower interest rates in China and other types of government intervention. But it's kind of unknown territory. We haven't really been here before with China. China always had strong growth in consumption, and now this is one of the first moments where we're really seeing this kind of downtrend. And I think part of the downtrend is long term, because we also are seeing the population, the first time negative population, right? So now we had 9 million babies born in 2023, which is lower than the previous year. There are a number of things that will be permanent, and a few others that perhaps are temporary when it comes to Chinese consumption.
So the decline in population and this potential flattening off of the power of the Chinese consumer to purchase shrimp, that's going to have an impact on the production, not just in China, but you mentioned Ecuador, and Ecuador has really hitched its wagon to China and has seen massive growth because of that. So tell us a little bit about how concerned you are about Ecuador with this softening in China.
No, that's absolutely right. I think China, Ecuador has been by far the most important beneficiary of Chinese growth. And if China, now China is going to slow down definitely compared to 2023. More the long-term question is, will there be again demand growth? And like we said before, we cannot really judge it given that there is also domestic production. But the current assumption, the current scenario is of a lower rate of growth of Chinese import demand. And that means that Ecuador. If Ecuador grows considerably more than that, let's just make some assumption figures. Let's say Chinese import demand for shrimp falls from 9% to perhaps 4 or 5%. Still very, very, very good for Western standards, but it is far less than what Ecuadorian historical growth rate has been. So that means if Ecuador does not follow this growth pattern also, that Ecuadorian supply will then spill over into the European and also US and maybe even Japanese and Korean markets. And we saw that happening back in 2020, when you remember when the Chinese found some COVID on a package of Ecuadorian frozen shrimp, and then they blocked the sales for a while, and you saw that spillover happen pretty quickly. But that does mean that the industry, the Ecuadorian industry, will grow slower or face lower prices. But then everyone will have lower prices, including Europe, including and thus including India and Vietnam and Indonesia. So the true competition between these producers will really begin once we have that type of slowdown in China. At the moment, I still think that the competition between these is only in some markets, a little, mostly in Europe, and a little bit in the US.
What would be the impact on Ecuador's producers if that scenario unfolds? Are they in a tough spot right now and could get worse?
I think they're in a tough spot already now. Their prices are actually now lower than the prices that are faced by the Indians and the Vietnamese and the Indonesians. And so it's already starting, the scenario is already there for Ecuador to start pulling volume out of China and bring it into the other markets. But then they need to invest in processing capacity and more be or go head to head to some of these other producers. Now, I do think that they are very efficient and they will probably carve out a strong position in the West and in, let's say, other markets. But it does mean that we're going to face let's say, a long period of low supply, of low prices, unless there is a slowdown in the supply growth, right?
So let's talk about the other key producers, Gorian, then outside of Ecuador. Give us your view on India. Shrimp export volumes were up year to date last year. There's some things on the horizon, though, for India that also are maybe a little concerning about their production.
Yeah, so India has been very interesting in 2023. So initially, we heard everybody in India talking about really high costs and the prices are coming down, and particularly as they're exposed to the US. And the peak of the difficulty was, let's say, in the first half of 2023. And by then, everyone that I spoke to was describing that 2023 will be a year when India corrects quite sharply to balance the market. That some people said 15%, some people said 20%. I even heard someone said 25% decline in India. And then I looked at some of the numbers, such as the imports of broodstock. And as we know, India is really import dependent on broodstock, and the broodstock numbers, with a lag of maybe 6 months or more, they can be an indicator of what Indian production should be like. So at one point during 2023, broodstock imports were down 48%. So you can imagine that kind of supported those views that India's supply should come down. But to the surprise of pretty much everyone that I know, Q3 was very strong. Actually, almost one of the strongest quarters of exports India has ever had. And actually, Q1 was strong too, because allegedly they had inventory from the previous year. So overall, it looks like that despite the slide in prices, India did not decline in production in 2023. And if it did, maybe it's only 1 or 2%. And certainly, you see them getting market share back in the United States in the last 3 months. So what has really happened here? The guesses are that, well, some of this volume may have been indeed inventory. So okay, maybe the production growth was a little bit more negative, maybe 3 or 4%. But another theory is that density has come down in response to the lower prices. But with the decline in density, the problems that they had before, such as mortality and low growth, there was less stress in the farm with less shrimp. Much more of them survived and grew to better size. And in the end, productivity had improved. That, in combination with more monodon production and even some domestic broodstock production, might explain this deviation from previous factors. But it could mean that actually India is more efficient than we thought. And then quite a few people now are saying, yeah, with America coming back to growth, maybe Europe, you know, we shouldn't be too negative about India in 2024. Maybe there will be small growth despite everything.
So in a scenario like this, when you have so many producers, Gorian, and all around the world, and you have softening demand, lower prices, how then, with such an elastic product, how then will the industry ever begin to get more value for their product, given that any rise in demand seems to prompt even more production? And is that cycle ever going to break, and is there a way to break that cycle?
Excellent question. I think shrimp really is the poultry, kind of the poultry model, and poultry has never gone up in price. Basically, it's going to be the an evolution of an industry where by the lowest cost producer wins. And I mean, think about it, it's a globally traded frozen product. With an elastic supply curve. So it's you can almost guarantee that this industry long term will face declining prices. Of course, if we were a mature sector and let's say we are having increasing feed costs of feed and then cost is going up, then you can maybe assume prices will sort of follow the cost of production. But in here, we're also an immature sector. There's so much more technology to go into this industry. We look at a variable called technology penetration. And you notice that it's so limited in shrimp. The delta of productivity between the best performers and the lowest performers is enormous. We heard that in Ecuador, when a large producer that has fully technified, as they call it, a technified farm, when they buy land from the least productive part of the country, which they kind of do, and the prices are very low, the increase in productivity could be between 6 to 10 times per hectare. So we still have a long, long way to go in this industry to improve productivity. It is one of the species that has the highest mortality. Oh, actually, I'm pretty sure it is the species of any, let's say, animal farm species. It has the highest mortality of any cycle, even if you measure it on a per week basis. So not the full cycle, but a per week basis. It has the highest mortality. So there are so many things that the sector still can improve that, yeah, we're going to see long-term low prices, even maybe further declining prices. But at the end, the industry will flourish because there is just still so much more to do on the efficiency side.
Gorian, give us a best case scenario for 2024 and a worst case scenario for 2024.
Yeah, well, what we're hoping for is that suddenly China will surprise us. And I mean, we already have a good feeling that Europe and US will come up in demand gradually. And I'm not hoping for a big jump there, but a really good surprise in China that suddenly consumer sentiment is not that bad, and that people really love to buy product from Ecuador, and that domestic production has maybe slowed down or flat, and suddenly we have this great growth of 8-9% in China. That would be a boost on its own. And if the industry, they don't have to have negative production. I don't think any of the producers need to contract anymore in 2024. But if they keep it flat and maybe even single digit production, that would then balance the market to a point where inventories would be consumed globally, and we would have an uptick in the price and a recovery in profitability. That would be our what we hope for. Now, the best case scenario is that suddenly Ecuador does another double-digit production, followed by India that also produce more because somehow they found more efficiency. And then China doesn't recover. And even worse, maybe Europe actually hasn't reached the bottom yet. So in that scenario, we still go further down and we make more losses for the farmers of this species.
Well, we will see how the year pans out, and we'll definitely talk to you again, Gorian, and get your views. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's it for this week's podcast. Thank you again, Gorian Nikolic, for joining us. We will be back next week with more news and views on the seafood industry. Remember, you can go to intrafish.com and find all our news around the clock. And don't forget, we will be hosting an event in Boston coming up on March 11th. We've got a fantastic lineup of speakers. We'll have discussions and debates. Go to intrafish.com or intrafishevents.com to get your ticket. Bye for now.